This week on Potlatch, Roger Brunt of the Northwest Territories tells about the Métis Association in Canada, and John Heffley of the Association of Interior Eskimos criticizes the land claim settlement. Roger Brunt attended the Circumpolar Conference in Barrow in June as the official representative of the Métis Association. He explained the organization to Isaac Katuyuk of Station KBRW and to me.
The Métis Association represents Métis people, which are mixed blood people of white and Indian descent, as well as non-status Indians or Indians not covered under the Canadian Indian Act.
I know it's a very difficult matter, but can you explain briefly the situation involved with Métis as far as their legal aspects and as far as land claims is concerned in Canada?
Yes, well, up till last year, the Métis people and the Métis Association weren't exactly sure if the federal government regarded them as having any definite Aboriginal rights or the right to make a land claim. And the government decided that the Métis people have that Aboriginal right, and if they wish to negotiate it either with the Treaty Indian people of the Northwest Territories, that would be acceptable, or either on their own, that would also be acceptable.
And what are non-status Indians now?
They are Indians not covered by the Indian Act, which means that either they were never covered by treaty in the first place, if they were maybe weren't in town when the treaty was taken, or if they chose not to be covered by the Indian Act, or if an Indian woman marries a non-status Indian, she loses her treaty and becomes non-status.
That's very confusing to us. Is that as confusing legally to you Canadians?
No, not really. The Métis in Canada have almost a separate heritage stretching from the Winnipeg area in the early pioneer days right through to the modern time. They were always sort of a separate people. They were the product of fur traders and trappers and Indian people, and they've always had more or less a separate identity. And the Métis Association exists to support that identity. The Métis Association exists to protect and promote the Métis identity. It's the same as an Indian Brotherhood is main function is to support Indian people. A Métis Association is to support Métis people.
What kinds of services will you be doing for the Métis Association while you're here in the Circumpolar Conference?
I'm here in the capacity of an observer, mainly interested in how other land claims that are already settled have been settled, and how upcoming land claims in Canada may either be tied in with or affect the Métis land claim.
Is there any relationship between Alaska Native land claims and the land claims movement in the Northwest Territories and in other parts of Canada?
Yes, I believe it's all part of the same process. It may well be that the process in Northern Canada is as important as the inevitable conclusion of it, that many people feel a land claim for the various groups is sort of a self-contained package effort, that when a land claim is settled, that it is put in a box and wrapped up and put on the shelf, and that's the end of it. Where the native people negotiating these claims feel that it will be the beginning rather than the end.
How do the Métis people feel about Canadians leaving them out of the land claims?
Well, that was actually the Métis' choice, that there's two separate problems. A Métis person, mixed blood, is not an Indian and is not white. He knows that well enough. That maybe basic weakness in the first place has grown to be a particular, almost a strength and an identity in Central Canada. The Métis people were the the traders, the riverboat pilots, the special constables for the police. They worked with the missions, and they were always sort of in between the Indian and the white people. And this process over a long period of time has led to a fairly independent type of people, and the Métis Association has grown up from that independence.
I see. Well, here in Alaska, you have to be one-fourth Native or more, and you're Native, you know. There's no in-between here in Alaska. How do they look at the Alaska Native land claims?
Well, that is the logical and ultimate hope in the Northwest Territories, that eventually all Native people, all Indian people, would get together and be able to negotiate together, which would be an improvement as unity of strength. However, there's another side to the issue, which is sort of a philosophical process that's going on now, that the Métis people believe more or less broadly that there exist certain structures, political, economic, of which they've been part of for a long time. They wish to continue to be part of it and use a land claim to strengthen their ability to function in more or less a white man's world. The conflict arises with the Indian Brotherhood, as they have a slightly different philosophy, whereby they have, or they wish to strengthen the things that make them Indian. So there's a basic philosophical disagreement as well. The problem is further complicated because it's perfectly possible that a person can be a Métis and be a Treaty Indian, or be Métis and be not a Treaty Indian, or be a Treaty, or be a pure Indian who is a non-status Indian, or be pure white and be a Treaty Indian. So that you have several possibilities. The one is that if you are an Indian, you can belong to the Indian Brotherhood. If you are an Indian, you can also belong to the Métis Association. If you are white, married to an Indian, you can belong to the Indian Brotherhood. And the whole process goes on and on with endless combinations. So in some cases, it's up to the individual which philosophy he wants to pursue, thereby which association he wants to belong to.
So the word Métis is a whole bunch of words, huh?
Well, to a Métis, it's a very special word. That it's a separate, it's not white, it's not Indian. It's something that people are proud of, and it's something that they don't want to lose. They feel that probably one of the key reasons for the existence of the Métis Association is that they don't want to be absorbed by either world. They aren't Indians, they're not pure Indians, and they don't want to be considered as Indians, and they're not white, and they don't want to be considered as white either.
Is there any religion involved in the Métis?
Oh, probably just the theory that God helps those that help themselves.
Just what and where are the Métis located in Canada?
Under the Indian Act, I suppose there's Métis in just about every part of Canada, but the largest movements are on the prairies and then up into the Mackenzie Valley, where traditionally it was the old travel routes through Canada, so that wherever there was white traders, they produced Métis, and they sort of stretch now from Winnipeg across the prairies and on up into Inuvik. Each province and region has their own sort of a setup, that in some provinces there's only one organization, in other provinces there's many organizations under a central umbrella. In the Mackenzie area of the Northwest Territories, there is the Indian Brotherhood and the Métis Association.
I see. I heard about some sort of a development going on in the Mackenzie Valley about water, some sort of a bridge or dam being built. Is this true?
Well, there that possibly refers to the dam that was contemplated for the both the Slave River and the Great Bear River, and this is possibly one of the many areas of difference between the two philosophies, between the Dene or the Indian Brotherhood and the Métis Association, where the Indian Brotherhood has called for a moratorium or halt to all development for the next 20 years, and the Métis Association would like to see controlled development after land claim settlements because they feel they need the jobs.
Has the Métis Association taken any stand on the gas pipeline route?
Well, they feel, as the Indian Brotherhood does, that it's very important the land claims be settled before any development takes place, that if massive development comes in before land claims are settled, that government will be so busy that they may not do justice.
Tema, this is a song called, what do you say, Almighty God.
Music from the entertainment session of the Circumpolar Conference in Barrow in June. Recently, John Heffley of the Association of Interior Eskimos told me he was writing to the head of the Yukon Indians to share with him his feelings about the 1971 Land Claim Settlement Act in Alaska. I asked Heffley to share with us some of those feelings.
They said that it was for the benefit of the Alaska Natives. Isn't that correct? And it turns out to be that it has benefited just a select few. And when I say a select few, it's these presidents and vice presidents, chairmen of boards. They're driving big cars and fancy homes, big bank accounts, things of this sort. And I still see the same native people in the village live in the same darn way. They haven't got anything better. They drew X number of dollars. You know what? From 1,000, I think it was, in some of the places, if they're just a regional corporation member and not a member of a village, also, and those people got 170 to 140, total anywhere between $2,000 and $400 that they got, and that's their land claims.
For those in Canada, who are working out their own land claim settlements. What would you recommend?
Well, one of the things they should do, as far as, you know, this is my, me personally saying that I believe that they should set up a one corporation. You should have, you know, some sort of a nucleus to work from.
Is this Route Canada?
Yes, I think that if it's going to be a land claims, that you have like our Congress, you know, in Washington, well, something similar to that, and they should have some central point to work from and have representatives from various, I guess they call them provinces or something of that sort in Canada, rather than states. But they could have those guys, and they could go back and talk to their people, find out what they need, and go back. Because if you start doing like they did here, you have 12 regional corporations. So you've got 12 regions, and each is supposed to be running his own little area. You've got village corporation under that, more people getting paid. So all you did is created a native bureaucracy, more red tape. It's just like Washington. Okay, the same darn thing. And they shouldn't do this. I think it's a bad deal because you're spending at least 50 or 60%, maybe more, of the money that's going to come in will be go out for just administrating each other.
But don't the corporations have the option of merging with each other in case they want to, and to simplify the land claim settlement?
No, the only thing they could is they can merge village corporations the way it's set up right now. That's in Alaska. And that's another thing I can't understand. They did this at with NANA, the Northwest Native Association. That's the one that's Kotzebue-based, okay? And nothing against John Schaefer. They probably think it's probably a good idea, but I don't think so. For the base that the villages had all merged with them, they have limited to say about their land around their villages now. It's controlled. You can say, well, we got so many board members on there from these different villages, but that's still gives you a limited voice. You know, you're only one-on-one, or, you know, from each area. And the people, before, when they were from NANA, which is your regional corporation, and, say, from Norvik, which was a village corporation, they had the same amount of money, $142. This is the exact amount, I'm just saying, you know, dollars. And so when the merger was approved by Washington, and the people voted on it, and they said, okay, all these, except the village of Kotzebue, they did not merge. They went against it. These people now should have got X number more dollars because they're only from NANA. See, they're not split, and the money didn't come. And you can't get an explanation out of anybody. It's the same way as on these corporations that, I don't know how much you know about corporations, corporate law, but they are not bound by any one law to give you dividends, to declare them, you know, a corporation. They can take that money in lieu of giving you the money. They can go ahead and say, we've got $2 million in excess, and instead of declaring dividends, we're going to buy KUAC. You know, maybe it's up for sale for $2 million. So we're going to invest the money, or we're going to invest the $2 million into KUAC, you see, to make more money. In the meanwhile, that money is not going out to those stockholders. And so Canada, I think, should look real close at it, and I think it's a mistake.
Do you suggesting that there shouldn't be corporations at all?
They should have one. There should have been one. It's the same way in Alaska. They could have had, look at AFN, you know, Alaska Federation Natives. They had the 12 regional corporations belong to it. They could have made well, I guess you might call it a sub-regional office, you know, and just have a district chairman call him and a secretary, and he could handle the affairs in that, of that certain area, and then go back to AFN. AFN could have been the central point.
Thunder, thunder, thunder. Love me like thunder. Thunder, thunder.
the music of Michael Murphy. Once again, that conversation with John Heffley. I asked him, would the corporation, though, be in the same kind of situation where it has to make money for its stockholders?
Well, no. I feel that if they're going to ask for a land claims settlement, one of the things they should do is the land should be given to the people. It belonged to the people in the first place. It shouldn't belong to a group, a select group. The people themselves, and if you've got, I don't care if it's 10,000 people and you had 10,000 acres, everybody would get an acre.
Isn't this what happened in the lower 48 and the money eventually got into the land eventually got into the hands of non-natives? And the natives wound up with, after a little while, with nothing.
Well, are you talking about like the on the reservations?
Well, that, for example.
Yeah, well, but on the reservations, the Indians had a lot of open land, and what they did is they said, okay, we're going to survey and mark off, and this will be your land. And they pushed them one side, and they took that other thing and then opened it up to homesteading and things. That was one of their, it's one of them treaties, is how a lot of those people lost their land, because you've got the...
Didn't some of them sell it?
Yeah, but I think it's like this. Jeff, I don't know, if you had a house, and do I have the right to tell you that you're going to have to keep it your whole life? Suddenly you decide to move somewhere else, and you've got something that's worth money. You need money for some reason or other, and that's your right. That is your right, not as a native or anything else, it is an American citizen or human being, to own something, be able to use it how you want, and be able to sell it when you want to. They could take, well, what I meant is maybe 10,000 acres and 10,000 people, let's say 10,000 acres and 5,000 people. So everybody gets still an acre and they've got 5,000 surplus, and that could be developed to benefit all of them. That could be used. But to get the people, they got actually a lot of no land. You take these people here in, right here in Fairbanks, you know. They don't have anything. You go back to regional corporations, the people in the villages, a lot of them owned their land and stuff even before this land native land claims. And one of the other things is, while I'm on the subject of people, lands, and money, is Canada. If you notice, right now they're having trouble with this subsistence hunting, fishing, the Alaska Natives, and these corridors that want to run all over. I don't want nobody to, because I own my house and an acre land, I don't want the state to say, I'm going to make a path across from here to here so a guy can go over there to the slough and fish. He can walk around my land. He can walk down the slough. He can get on the state highway and walk down it way and do the same thing. So I think that the Canadian people should be real watchful as losing their subsistence rights. I think that's one of the things that they should emphasize. They should see how Alaska, how it's happened, and maybe they need a so-called native board of game and be able to make their own laws and own regulations on their own lands. Whether it work or not, I don't know. It'd have to be discussed, because I'm not, I guess you call them a biologist. But I do know one thing, that the natives, like the Siksikpuk, your ground squirrels, are similar to the rabbits as far as when they get overpopulated, they get some sort of disease, you know, something, and they die. Just die off, bam, 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 and then they come back. And so you, by hunting them like for parkas and for food, you keep them balanced. Well, you see where the state wants to, you know, they cut off this and they say there's no hunting them because they're a little marmot, you know, type, and I guess they're cute. You see? So I think that they should really emphasize their Aboriginal rights on subsistence hunting and fishing in Canada and keep it and don't lose it, because they've got a wedge now that they can use. The Alaska Native people, when they went ahead and they got their land, they got X number of dollars, and they sallied forth what they thought was right, or but was determined by lawyers, I think, and outside influence that way. But you see that they never put anything really for any on their subsistence hunting and fishing at that time. I went to the hearings on the sea mammal bill, and I spoke on those, and that was one of the things where the federal government said, you can hunt your seals, you can hunt your polar bear.
That was in Nome in 1972?
Well, we sent a representative, and they had one in Fairbanks here, a later date, and then they came back, and they were discussing on the hides from the animals, like the polar bear. And they decided that if a native killed a polar, he eats the meat and he can use the hide for himself, he can make mukluks or rusks. But what he can't do is he couldn't take the whole hide and sell it. It has to be altered. You know how they've done with the ivory. And they come in and really, I don't see why. I never got the answer even at the meetings of why can't they tell us, say, now if you want a nice hide and you want it in your den, I've ate the meat. I didn't waste anything. So rather than just cut up portions of hide and the rest is still junk, right? It's to be thrown away. You only can use just certain portions. And if I could sell it to you and you go to the expense of having a tan, it's being utilized. I see no harm in this. The seal's the same way. In fact, we got into an argument on the creativity of the Alaska Natives as far as arts of using furs for flowers. They said that is an Aboriginal. It's taking a man and telling him, you're a creative artist, but you only can create in this realm. You're restricted right to here. You can't branch out. So I think some of these things that if the people in Canada look at of what's transpired over here, they can take the time and maybe get around some of this. It'll save them a lot of trouble later.
Are you suggesting that this portion be put right in the land claim settlement or be done separately?
Right in with the land claims. Do it right then. To establish whether it's going to be certain areas and what they can or can't do as far as their citizens, and a definite time. And I think if it's their land and they've had these Aboriginal rights, and then they should keep them. They shouldn't be lost. And I feel also it's like here, the caribou wasn't so much the natives shooting. They've been doing that for how many hundreds and hundreds of years. I think it's game, you know, poor game management. And nobody really, as you know, it's human nature. If there's a fault, they want to blame you. No one will come up there and say, it's mine. I did it. They'll blame everything except themselves. So if all of this thing is, if it's ironed out ahead of time.
John Hepley of the Association of Interior Eskimos. This is Jeff Kennedy reminding you to write in to KUAC any comments or suggestions you have about our program. We're at KUAC in Fairbanks. Thanks for listening. Potlatch is produced in the studio of KUAC, is funded in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.